The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Please keep your arms and legs inside the car at all times.
This is your final warning.
Now, here's your host, Mr. Thrill Ride himself, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. How do you top yesterday? Alvin and Chris, there's no way we could top yesterday, is there? We had the President of the United States on this program.
Yeah, unless we have him on twice, and that could top it.
I got to say, we come close today. Today we have Charlie Kirk in a couple of minutes and John Zmirak right after Charlie. That comes very close to at least equaling the President of the United States. What happened yesterday with the president, we put it on YouTube. Chris, thanks for putting up everything on YouTube so quickly, because honestly, sure, it's amazing to me how many people are watching the YouTube. The last I checked, I think it was last night, I think the president, the clip with the president had 100,000 views, which
it's 110 right now. I just checked, 110.
It's kind of an amazing thing. I was just so, I'm still staggered that we had him on. It wasn't a real conversation. He was kind of doing his big talking point, and I was doing my job, which is to interrupt the President of the United States.
Yeah, I think it's like you counted up the odds of trying to line up an interview that would be interrupted by, you know, a phone call from the president and then get that on the show. I mean, that's pretty wild.
I think that's one of those God things. I'm going to be more and more blunt about my faith. I think we have to lean on God right now. To me, the news, the big news that I want to communicate on this program, it couldn't really be bigger, unfortunately, is that we are living through something just hard to believe. It's the attempt to steal a presidential election. But let's frame that. Let's explain that. What is that? That is a wicked conspiracy. There are big names behind the conspiracy. This is not about precincts in Arizona and Michigan and Georgia, little nefarious things. No, this goes back to someone or some group that clearly has power to tell at least six swing states, you need to stop the counting, and we need to put in plan B or plan A or whatever it was. The question is, who was behind that? Now, folks, the other huge news, which is conceivably bigger news, is that the mainstream media and Fox News, whatever they are at this point, are themselves not asking this question. That's just mind-bending to me, that it falls to us on this little program to be asking this question. I don't get it. I cannot imagine that Tucker Carlson wouldn't be screaming from the rooftops about this for every minute of the hour that he has. Albin, you said that Sean Hannity last night was talking about this, but what I saw of his show was also not impressive to me. It was very strange to me that he wasn't. This is, I mean, I guess the point is that, you know, you're talking about the thing that you can't talk about, right? It's like the insane thing that never happens, and then you're embarrassed to talk about it because you sound like a nut. But then the question is, how are so many people that I know and respect, brilliant people, saying the same thing? I had Steve Cortez was on the prayer call the other night, and he went down the list, and then you have folks like the people that testified in Gettysburg last week, and you have the people who testified in Arizona yesterday. These are the computer experts talking about anomalies that are so striking. Anybody with a basic grasp of math understands something's fishy here. Now, the idea that this could be happening in America is just mind-bending. So I guess I feel that everyone needs to, first of all, understand what's happening, that everything we talk about freedom and keeping the republic, this is it. If you allow bad actors, whether they're in the so-called deep state, whether it's the CIA or the FBI or any of this, you know, cuckoo cuckoo stuff, whoever it is, we cannot let this happen in America. Once it happens, we cease to be America. We're on that tipping point. We're at that tipping point. And I'm really mystified by why the messaging isn't clearer. Even the president yesterday, he's always saying that it's rigged. And it, well, yes, I don't have much doubt about that. But what about the details? There's a guy, I think we spoke about him yesterday with Kevin McCullough, three-star general Tom McInerney. He was on the Brannon House program. I'm not familiar with Brannon House, but he was on there with General Flynn the other day. And General Flynn obviously knows more about the deep state than anybody, and it's why he got in such difficulty over the last 4 years, was put through hell. The two of them were talking on this Brannon House program, and I thought to myself, I don't really know who Tom McInerney is, but I know who General Flynn is. And they're saying things that every American should be up in arms, taking to the streets and saying, we will not allow our country to be stolen from us, from we the people. So I'm just, I just want to put it out there that there is nothing more serious than this. This is an amazing thing that is happening in the country. So I will talk to Charlie Kirk about this in the next segment. We will talk to John Zmirak about this a little bit later. And later in the week, we will try to have some people who can tell us what is happening, because this is the existential crisis that I have been talking about when I wrote my book, If You Can Keep It. I was saying that we had that crisis in 1776, we had that crisis in 1860. And I was talking about how we are approaching that kind of a crisis, but it's come to a sharp point suddenly in this election. And it's a very big deal. And I want people to understand that there are some who are recognizing this. Don't let the silence fool you. There are plenty, but they're not people with the biggest voices, maybe because they think it would be unseemly, you know, to talk about this. But I certainly don't feel that way. I think if you are conspiring to steal an American election, that is, it's treason. It's unbelievable. These are foreign, you know, the Constitution talks about foreign and domestic enemies. Domestic enemies have held a rusty blade to the throat of Lady Liberty. How else do you see it? And we're gonna just be talking about that until we get to the bottom of this, until this election is shown to be what it has been, which is fraudulent, and until we find out who actually voted for the president, how many votes he actually got, and he's inaugurated. So I'll put it out there.
Yeah. You know, when we had last night, yesterday's show, when you interviewed Colonel Mastriano, and he was talking about how the reps in Pennsylvania, they would not stand up. This is their moment to stand up and take a stand. This is the nation we're talking about, not your job. Your job is to represent.
Right. Most of these people are cowards, let's be honest. I mean, you look at Germany in the 30s, these weren't like openly wicked people. These were people who simply failed to have the courage to do the right thing at the right time. They were covering their rear ends. They were afraid to lose a job, afraid to whatever it was. they were not heroes. We need to be a nation of heroes. That's what America needs to be. As far as I'm concerned, that's what it means to be a Christian, to have faith in the God of Scripture, is not to fear anything, to do what is right. That's real freedom. All right, when we come back, we have the fun of talking to Charlie Kirk and all kinds of other great stuff. Don't go away, folks.
The sound of your own wheels. I know enough to say someone has taken my place when time goes back.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Look, I've got Charlie Kirk as my guest. Charlie of Turning Point USA, the Falkirk Center, Liberty University. My friend, welcome.
Great to be back, Eric. And I think I'll be seeing you in person next week.
I think you will. I've got questions. And this morning I was kind of freaking out a little bit on my own because I thought to myself, what I know of the conspiracy to steal a U.S. election, I mean, you sound like a maniac with a propeller hat on roller skates going down Fifth Avenue, like one of these classic nuts when you start talking about the CIA and the FBI and so on and so forth. And yet, unfortunately, it looks like that's where we are. My question to you, Charlie, is I feel not enough people are taking this seriously. This is like 9/11, but everybody goes, well, so what? I don't really understand how domestic enemies taking over the greatest nation in the history of the world would not be the only news show. When I hear people talk about COVID restrictions, I think, are you people out of your mind? Why are you talking about that? A meteor like just hit Washington, D.C., and you're talking about that crap? Like, I have no ability. Give me some context. I mean, do you think the president is lonely? Is he talking to the right people? I just don't have any sense. These people are not good at messaging. Let me put it that way.
Well, I have a theory here you might agree or you might take, and even people on our side that are afraid to talk about this, I think that they don't want it to be true. I think that there's a discomfort that will set in. There's almost a point of no going back as soon as you start to admit that there is this broad organized criminal network that probably stole this election. And I think a lot of people are kind of saying, look, 10 months ago, I was living a nice life. We had a great New Year celebration. No one was wearing masks and everything was wonderful. Can we just go back to that? Maybe Joe Biden will get us back to that. And it's almost as if you start to talk about this, there is no going back to that. Meaning
okay, look,
that
you're
going
right.
to a whole nother level.
Charlie, you're wise for your young age, and that's not saying much. You're so young that that's really saying nothing. But I want to tell you, I think what you're saying is correct for your average person. What I don't understand is people that I would think of as on the right side, as heroic voices, have been quiet. Am I only seeing certain information and these people aren't seeing it? In other words, how do you dismiss a Sidney Powell or a Giuliani or a Jenna Ellis? In other words, I think that there's some people that they're really cynical, that they could just so easily dismiss this stuff. And all of the evidence of people talking about the mathematical anomalies and all that kind of stuff, it's so compelling. What am I missing? In other words, how do other people not see this? Am I just gullible? I'm sure that's what many people must think.
No, most of the other people do see this. The question is, why are they not speaking out about it? And again, okay. I think there is a retreat saying that either we can't win the more we talk about it. I'm going to pay a big personal cost if I talk about it, which is a very big thing, Eric. The more that we've been talking about this, we've been suppressed by social media. We've gotten strikes by the big tech companies. You know, this is not exactly a topic or an issue that is lighthearted to talk about in the 6 o'clock news hour. This is serious stuff that involves criminal networks. This involves cover-ups. This involves the actual integrity of our elections. And this is typically actually, this tells us we're onto something, Eric, because whenever there is a vast network of behavior that is illegal is uncovered, it's typically this sequence of events. And the argument I make is this, and I don't mean this as an anti-Catholic argument, I don't. But if you would have told anyone in Boston in the early 1960s that there were hundreds of priests that were molesting children, and the Catholic Church knew about it, the diocese covered it up, and they had legal represent, people would say, "You're nuts, shut up, heretic, go to confession."
Okay, look, that is brilliant. No. Listen, that is a brilliant analogy, Charlie. Thank you, because it does help us to frame this. I was going to go, my analogy is not nearly as good, but I was going to say, let's say it's 1917 or 1916, and you're living in Russia, and you have a wonderful life in Russia. And somebody tells you that in a matter of months, this nation, this vast nation, the nation of Tolstoy and Dostoevsky, this is going to become one of the most satanic, oppressive, slave states the world has ever known. People are going to be tortured for thinking the wrong way. The Tsar's secret police were nothing compared to what is going to happen. And every intellectual, every person of sincere Christian faith, every Jew is going to be targeted and sent to the most horrific death camps and work camps in Siberia. Now, you and I know that happened. So for me, what this amounts to is people are unwilling to see evil. In other words, people keep thinking that the normal life we had before COVID or whatever it was, or the normal life before Trump, people who hate Trump think if we could just go back to, you know, the normal life of 2015, they're unwilling to deal with the fact that there is evil. Priests molesting boys is satanic evil. But I guess I'm just surprised, Charlie, that there are so few people that we might look to who aren't talking about this. I mean, why aren't Mitch McConnell and those kind of people screaming about this? Tucker Carlson's not screaming about this. I adore Tucker Carlson, but he's not really screaming about this. It doesn't seem normal to me. It seems very strange to me.
Well, and there's a lot of layers to that. And part of it, Eric, is that there is a group of people out there that are in power, you know, Senator McConnell and some of these other members of Congress, that they're okay if Trump loses. In fact, they're more powerful. Mitch McConnell becomes the pseudo-Republican president.
Okay, so that's the point, right? So you look at somebody like McConnell. I've always thought that he was a swamp creature. That's what I consider him to be. Shame on him. Shame on him. But there are a zillion others, whether it's Ted Cruz or there are so many heroes, even they don't seem to be speaking loudly enough. Or maybe
and
they're not.
Rand Paul spoke up. Yeah.
Okay.
It's right. Worthy of recognition, but your point is exactly right, Eric. Why is there this stunning landscape of silence? When I made an argument yesterday, and I think it actually resonates, particularly what you're saying. It's not that we have no evidence. It's almost that we have too much evidence that people don't believe us because they say there's no way there could be this much evidence. And also people say that Biden's the winner. It's almost that we have mountains of evidence. We have an overwhelming amount of evidence that normal people look at this and they say, there's no way you have this much evidence. And I would know about this by now. I'd read it in the New York Times, and they almost disengage.
You're right.
No, the other point of this, just super quick, is that it's the natural human inclination in this moment is to go back to memories of when things were comfortable, when things were normal. But we have now entered a fighting season in our country, and it tells us in Ecclesiastes there is a season for everything. This is a fighting season. A lot of people don't like fighting seasons.
You're exactly right, Charlie, and I think that, you know what this reminds me of? Again, you have to go to history to try to figure this out. Every time I hear about the United States entering the Second World War on December 7th, coming up, like in this week, December 7th, 1941, and you think to yourself, what were these jerks doing for over 2 years while Hitler, in the most evil way, went about his dark business on the European continent? We in this country did nothing. Now, in retrospect, because we did eventually get in, we act like we were the heroes of World War II, and we did it. And you think, well, where were we when Churchill was all alone, and when everybody was saying, it sounds like what you're saying and what I'm saying, they were kind of acting like, well, you know, we don't need to get involved. That's in Europe. And that, and we, now we look back and we think, how could any human being with any human feeling not get involved in a war against Adolf Hitler? But they needed 2 years of bucking up before they were willing to enter the war, before Pearl Harbor happened that sort of forced us to enter the war. But I think maybe we're in something like that now.
I know we have to take a break, but I have a very interesting point on that. So we'll get into that in the next segment.
Well, you always, that's no news. You've always got interesting points. That's why we love to talk to you, Charlie. Folks, don't forget, please go and support our sponsor, Mike Lindell. Go to mypillow.com and mystore.com and use the code Eric, please. Thank you. Investors seeking steady cash flow, ready to diversify? NRIA has grown to be one of the nation's leading specialists and offers 10% annualized monthly payouts with bonuses targeted at 18 to 21%. That's right. You could receive steady 10% return monthly payments with bonuses. As their slogan says, they specialize in realty investing done right. You can even use your 401k or IRA to invest. NRIA's 15-year track record and $1.2 billion in new construction development backs you. Learn how you can invest in this hard asset real estate cash flow fund today and receive 10% annualized monthly payouts with bonuses. This is something savvy investors should research and consider. Call now 800-700-5483. That's 800-700-5483 or visit NRIA.net. Folks, I got some embarrassing news to share with you, but you know what? This is just the kind of a show where I don't care. I'm willing to lay my heart, you know, on the line. Here's the issue. Mike Lindell with MyPillow, you may notice that I have a bobblehead of him near me. He's here to remind all of us that when you go to MyPillow.com, you get whopping discounts if you use the code Eric, okay? Now, there are a lot of people who haven't done that, and we have your names here. And Chris Himes and Albin pointed out to me that there's like three pages of you whose first name is Eric. You yourself, I mean, that's humiliating for me that even though your name is Eric, you're still not willing to use the code Eric. I mean, if you don't want to use it because it's my name, use it because it's your name. But the point is that I see who you are. And I just feel humiliated by this. Please go to mypillow.com. It's okay, Mike. It's going to be okay. Go to mypillow.com. Use the code Eric. You're going to get whopping savings and really high quality products. Did I mention that? Thank you. Folks, I'm talking to Charlie Kirk. Charlie, let's just continue the conversation.
So you were mentioning the 2 years leading up to Pearl Harbor. The interesting backstory of that is that FDR, he did want to get more engaged in Europe. However, the population of America was very against another conflict in the European theater. Some people were war weary after World War I, but actually sure. The honest truth is that the American economy was, yes, going through the, you know, the kind of post-depression period, still trying to get out of, you know, rebuild ourselves. But the American population had this viewpoint that if it doesn't hit our shore, why does it matter? And part of the sequence that led to Pearl Harbor was FDR, you don't want to say provoking, but he was almost beating the war as a drum, the drums of war by saying, hey, Japan, you're getting no more oil from us. That's basically what ended up springing the attack on Pearl Harbor. But it's really interesting, which is the American people did not find that posture of fighting until the war or the battle came straight to our shores. And it's a great analogy, because people were thinking back to how awful World War I was in the American homeland. And they said, I don't want to go through that again. It's not our problem. Right. I think a lot of people are now thinking through kind of in the movement and in American politics, I don't want to go back to some of our nasty political fights. And which is strange, because we know who the left is right now. We know what drives them. We know what they're possessed with and the ideas they're possessed with. And why any conservatives would believe for a second that we're all of a sudden going to go back into kind of normal times is fascinating to me.
I mean, it is fascinating. And National Review is dead. Like, I cannot imagine that they are daily writing articles on why we need to move on. And it's a disgrace that the president is going out on this note. And I think to myself, folks, again, I don't know what you're looking at, but the very idea, this is like somebody saying, you know, that your child is being murdered and raped down the block. And if you do anything about it, it's not going to go well for you. I can guarantee you 80% chance you're going to die. And
yeah.
In other words, that there's no way I'm going to let that happen. If there's a 1 in 1,000 chance, 1 in 1,000,000 chance, I'm going to go and do the right thing. I would be happy to die, because that is so evil. What is happening? What is happening in this country right now, if it is even possible, in other words, if there are people who say, well, I'm not so sure, I would say to them, well, if you think there's any chance that this is real, the idea that you would look the other way doesn't really make any sense to me. How can you not take this seriously and understand that if Biden were inaugurated under this cloud right now with 70 million plus people believing he's a real fraud, not just they don't like him, they didn't vote for him, but that he's a fraud, that you wouldn't speak up? This is, I'm just mystified. I don't get this.
Well, and part of it is that people believe the kind of hypnosis from the main propaganda channels, where they say, well, there's no evidence of widespread voter fraud. First of all, there you have an objective and a subjective statement. So this is a very important point that we need to, you've heard this many times, right? It's almost an incantation that they say on television every day. There's no evidence of widespread voter fraud. They say it almost as a prayer ritual on CNN. They have to every day. And so what you have there is a no, meaning there's none, zero, that's an objective, and then widespread. That's a really important thing, though. How do you define widespread? This is really important. For example, 1% wouldn't be widespread. That's not widespread. 1% is the margin in many of these states. So all of a sudden, if we just have 1% voter fraud, Eric, 1% Donald Trump is president. And based on all the evidence we have way more evidence to show there's even more than 1%.
But even that narrative, in other words, to talk about that, isn't the real issue, Charlie, that we're talking about conspiracy? There were people, leaders, powerful people who made a decision before the election that this is what we're going to do. That's really what we need to go after, isn't it? Who were the people conspiring to overturn the will of the American people? Isn't that the real question? Who were those people?
No, of course, but just a lot of the response that regular Republicans say is, well, there's no evidence of widespread voter fraud. It couldn't have made a difference. A lot of them have started to see some of the narrative. They still don't trust the results, but they're kind of like, it's time to move on, time to close the chapter. It's time to, you know, let's get back to being gentlemen and, you know, overseeing the downfall of the West. And yeah. So, yes, the who is very important. And there's about 50 different variables here. And I have it all made sense to me last night. We were doing a live stream and it all just kind of came together. I said, of course. I said, I went to about 15 MAGA rallies in the last 6 months. These are very sophisticated productions, multi-thousand volunteers, tens of thousands attendees, security. And I said, now I know why Biden wasn't doing events. All that infrastructure was being deployed into all this other stuff, ballot laundering, signature nonsense. I mean, to do events is a lot of work. It's not about the virus and maybe he couldn't build a crowd. The point is this, is that they put all of their collective brain power, not into persuasion, not into actual kind of the typical mechanics of an election. Instead, they said, we are now going to try and change the way we do elections forever. So a big part of this was the Center for Technology and Civic Life, CTCL, the $350 million that came from Facebook that changed the way we did elections forever, where we had these big ballot drop boxes that were on every single corner in urban America. Funded by big.
This is the $350 million
that Zuckerberg
gave. Okay, now that's its own scandal. When we come back, I want to ask you about that.
Again, there's 15 of these that I could put all together. So yeah.
Well, I think we need that. So we'll be right back talking to Charlie Kirk. Don't go away. Nobody you meet could ever see the loneliness. Folks, I'm talking to Charlie Kirk. We're talking about everything. And by everything, I mean people trying to steal America from the American people. Charlie, you just mentioned Zuckerberg of Facebook gave, I heard, $400 million to what?
So it was a sleepy 501c3. They had about $500,000 budget called the Center for Technology and Civic Life. They really didn't do anything dramatic until they got approached, and there was a plan that was hatched around April or May of this year, probably because the big tech companies were afraid of a antitrust complaint that was coming their way very soon from a Democrat Congress. So they kind of wanted to show the Democrats with a wink and a nod, hey, we're doing the good work. Because you have to understand, these antitrust complaints that the Democrats were floating in Congress were nothing more than a legislative extortion scheme to try to get the multi-trillion dollar companies to get involved in this election on their behalf, because they blamed Facebook for Donald Trump's election wrongly in 2016. Of course, they'd actually never blame their candidate or their tactics or their messaging. So then Zuckerberg donates $350 to $400 million to the Center for Technology and Civic Life. And again, you go from a $500,000 operating budget, Eric, to $350 to $400 million. You're probably going to have a pretty good idea of where that money's going. Zuckerberg's not going to execute that wire transfer or donate that stock if he doesn't know in a pretty form or fashion that that's going to benefit something he cares about. And so under the virus restrictions that all of these state, local municipalities were under, particularly Philadelphia, Detroit, Milwaukee, Georgia, Maricopa County, and Phoenix, the Center for Technology and Civic Life started to work hand in hand with the Secretary of State's office and the county recorders in these massive counties in swing states, primarily swing states, but they peppered around other states just to cover themselves legally. And they started to install these massive drop boxes. And this is just one thing they did all across the country. And you might have saw them where then you could put ballots in them. Now, what's the significance of that? Well, as people were getting 10, 15, 20, 30 ballots sent to their home wrongly, and everyone wears masks all the time, you could, in an unidentified way, drop off 30 ballots into these drop boxes, and then the ballots are effectively laundered. This is exactly what happened. So you have dirty ballots that, if you were to go through the regular process of going to the county recorder's office and turning them in with your ID, they'd say, well, show me if this is really your ballot. You can then drop them into these boxes, and you're completely cleansed of it. And you can't get caught because it's not mail fraud. So there's no record of it going actually into the U.S. Postal Service mail system. It's this very weird kind of short circuitry of the elections. Beyond that, they provided the vote counting tabulators. They provided grants for people that actually had back end and front end access to how the votes were counted. I'll give you another example. An organization by the name of Rock the Vote. You may have heard this organization before.
Of course. Yeah.
They were given front-end access to input ballots, front-end access to input ballots in Pennsylvania and Michigan. So they were given basically the passwords to the Secretary of State's office. This is discovered by the great Phil Klein, who we've had on our program, former Attorney General of Kansas. I encourage you to have him on. He's uncovered a lot of this.
If you give us his information, he's been on my list. I'll get that from you when we go off the air.
But this is just one of the many different scandals that were operating together. And what's very clear, though, the only through line here, though, Eric, and you mentioned it, is that powerful people are behind all of these. This is not an organic thing where people are rising to the streets or big rallies are happening. No. Center for Technology and Civic Life, a guy worth $110 billion writes a $350 to $400 million check. Wow. all of a sudden big tech starts censoring all conservative voices. The multi-trillion-dollar companies get involved in our elections. Signature verification. Who changed that? Secretary of State's office in collusion and conjunction with people like Stacey Abrams and the multi-billionaire lobby got involved and changed the way we did elections, the signature verification. All of these things were plotted months in advance. So while we were worried about the polls, maybe not, we were really loving voter registration. All of a sudden, they were changing the way that elections were done. And here's the proof. If you want to say, well, Charlie, how can you prove this? Florida. That's how I can prove it. It's the only state where none of this crap was allowed. Ron DeSantis said, you're not putting these boxes on our streets. We do elections our way. You have to, if you request a ballot, you have to verify the signature. Everything was done beautifully in Florida. I voted in Florida, Eric. And I saw firsthand when I voted early in Sarasota County, Florida, a guy tried to come in and vote right next to me as I was signing in. And they said, well, sir, he checked in. They said, sir, it shows that we already sent you a ballot. He says, I didn't get a ballot, making some excuse. They said, we can't let you vote today because we already sent you a ballot unless you surrender your ballot. He got frustrated and left. I said, right there is an example of voter fraud that just got deterred. The system was working in front of my very eyes. And Florida, what did Donald Trump do? Won by 4 points. So you have a battleground state where Florida used to be decided by 10,000 votes or less. It was always razor thin. They did their elections the right way. Do you remember in 2018? You had Brenda Snipes in Broward County, where you had Senator Bill Nelson against then Governor Rick Scott. This is just 2 years ago. Brenda Snipes kept on finding ballots and they were driving in the middle of the night. You know what Ron DeSantis did the moment he became governor? He said, I demand your resignation. We're redoing the way we do elections in this state. And all of a sudden, Florida had their results by 9 o'clock Eastern and Donald Trump wins by 4 points.
Unbelievable. I knew there was a reason I was going to have you on this program today. I got to tell you, Charlie, this is all wonderfully clarifying, not just for me, but I'm sure for most of my audience. Where do you think we are? Do you think where do you think we go between here and December 14th?
I think the state legislatures need to start stepping up, and I think we're starting to see that. I think every state legislature in Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan should step up and call a special session to possibly withhold electors. I don't necessarily think they should seat them for Trump. I think that would be probably a step too far. Just say we don't have the confidence to seat our electors. That's the way this process works. And it says very clearly in the Constitution that the state legislatures oversee the seating of electors. And we'll see the kind of backbone that we have in some of these states. We are seeing the preemptive certification of these elections in a lot of states, but that doesn't mean anything. Certification is nothing. It all comes down to the state legislature. We might get a very favorable ruling, I should say, from the Supreme Court. I am not banking anything on the courts at this moment. I think that they're going to try to be apolitical. And if there's anything, there might be some technicality clarification. So I think the best hope we have is the state legislature.
We're going to hang on to you for another segment if you can spare it. Can you spare it? Okay, folks, we'll be back.
This is for all the lonely people. Thinking that life.
Hey there, folks. We talk about a lot of tough stuff lately. We're going through some tough times. One of the things you can do, this is very important. If you're going through a tough time, do something for somebody who is going through a much tougher time. Help somebody who is suffering more than you are. That's an amazing thing to be able to do that. We have an opportunity. We are working again this month, as we have in the past, with CSI, that's Christian Solidarity International, to help free slaves in South Sudan. Now imagine, while we complain about the possibility of entering a dark time in this nation where we're no longer free, imagine while we're having that conversation that there are people today who are actual slaves, because the radical Muslims, whether it's Boko Haram, they have a belief that slavery is okay, and that if you don't believe the way they do, if you're a Christian, for example, they can capture you and enslave you. Now, CSI is working on the ground in places like Southern Sudan, in fact, particularly with Southern Sudan, that's what we're doing, to free slaves. And they have told us that $250 given to CSI helps them to free a slave and to set up that person in a life of freedom. So what do they get? First of all, they have the ability, and I want you to understand how amazing this is, folks, that they have established relationships where they can do this. They can actually buy slaves out of slavery. It's an amazing, amazing thing. It's complicated. We'll talk about it another time. But they do that. Then they set them up with aid, with food, literally buy them a goat. They give them a whole fresh start in life. They get a novitium vaccine for cattle. That is what they do, okay, in order to buy a slave back. If you go to a slave owner in Southern Sudan and say, your cattle are dying, we have a vaccine. We'll give you the vaccine for your cattle if you give us this human being. This is what they have figured out, and it works, and that's what they're doing. That's why we need this money from you. So they do that. They buy the vaccine to get the person back. Then they set them up. They give them a goat, a she-goat, which gives milk. They set them up with a whole survival kit. It involves, you know, a blanket, cooking pots, all kinds of stuff, fishing hooks. They need all these things. Okay, now we need your help, folks. We're going to give you all kinds of stuff as we normally do, but I'm not going to talk about that right now. What I'm going to talk about now is the fact that we need everybody to help. So if you can't give $250, what can you give? There are some people who for Christmas, you say, you know what? What do I need for Christmas? I don't need anything for Christmas. I have everything. Why don't I do this? I will give grandpa in grandpa's name. He doesn't want anything. In his name, I'm going to free four slaves. For $1,000, I can literally free slaves. This is not theoretical. This is not a nice idea. This is not about giving you some big company that does something good. This is about $250 freeing a human being from slavery. Hard even to imagine, but it's true. We'll talk about it more this month, but we want you to help. I'm going to give you the phone number. You can go to our website, metaxastalk.com. It's just important for us to do a good thing when we're going through such a tough time in our country. Do something great for somebody who, without you folks, without you helping them, they are enslaved. We're going to be telling you about this month. But here's a phone number if you prefer a phone number. Go to metaxastalk.com. It's all there. But the phone number is 888-253-3522. I'll say it again. Imagine that you could do this today. Imagine that you have the ability to do this, something this good and this powerful today. 888-253-3522. There are people out there who can give $10,000. I say it again, that I'd be delighted to spend an evening with you as a way of thanking you. Anybody out there who can give $10,000, it's my joy. And down the line, folks, this is an amazing opportunity to do good. Please take this opportunity. God bless you.